For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is High Level Wisdom for New Generation Leaders. We interview senior level baby boomers who share their stories, insights, and how-tos for the emerging leadership of millennials. Our mission is to celebrate their accomplishments and aid in preserving their business knowledge. I'm your host, Chris Williams.
Without further ado, I want to welcome Paula to the show. Paula, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Chris. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely. So, Paula, here's what I would like to do. Here on High Level Wisdom, you know, one of the things that I think is very important for all of our listeners to get a chance to do is to hear a little bit about the person, because they hear kind of, you know, all of the stats and they'll kind of learn a little bit more about the company. But I would like for you to just kind of share a little bit about your corporate journey and how you even became an entrepreneur, number one, and a little bit about your company, if you will, as well.
Okay. How I became an entrepreneur. Well, right out of college, I started with a Fortune 500 company, down in Bradstreet, was headquartered in New Jersey, and I was actually in Texas at the time, and was in sales, pretty much selling the database. So basically, Dun & Bradstreet offers data to businesses for business-to-business marketing. And back then, Chris, there was no such thing as the internet, no such thing as email. Everything was data driven in terms of just really providing data for salespeople to make direct sales calls, and then also fueling direct marketing programs, which would be basically direct mail. So I spent 11 years there and decided I wasn't really cut out for corporate America. They had tried to promote me a couple of times into management, but I just didn't really feel like I fit in there. And I'd always, really since I was young, always wanted to have my own business, but still wasn't quite there when I left D&B. So I did a little stint in real estate and did a stint of being a stockbroker, and really didn't enjoy that because I was still had a hankering that I wanted to build something from the ground up. So that's what I did. I started my business at my dining room table, and I went back to what I knew, which was data and marketing. And still the internet hadn't come on because I started my business in 1998. So we started out doing direct mail campaigns for both business-to-business and business-to-consumer. And then about 2 years in, is when the internet came on. So we just kind of morphed into being an agency of, booking and managing online marketing programs. And nobody was really doing it yet. The ad agencies hadn't come on full steam doing it yet. We had kind of a niche agency, and it was a lot of fun. But it still bothered me that we didn't have any intellectual property in the business. Nothing that was, be able to position the company up for sale or other than goodwill and the customers themselves. So we kind of jumped in 2004 and got involved with, email marketing. That's how I met my partner. He's on the East Coast, and he basically had a technology that was able to create and validate email addresses. So we partnered with Dun & Bradstreet, and Dun & were two of the major companies that we started out with, and working with their Fortune 2000 and mid-sized accounts and providing email, strictly email data at the time. And then that morphed, Chris, into building our own database. So probably around 2007, we decided to, 2008 maybe, we decided to build out our own database with all the information that we didn't have, with addresses, phone numbers, that type of thing, and then also with contacts with email addresses. So today, as we sit here, we work with Fortune 2000 companies and mid-sized companies and small and startups, growing companies, helping them enter the email channel, which is very economical, to generate leads and business for their companies. And we just launched in Q4 a ability to combine the email marketing with online display advertising that you see, like when you're visiting websites, etc. So it's been kind of a journey, but I can tell you that 30 years ago, when it was direct mail to today, there's just a lot of moving parts, very, very different world, very, gotta stay up on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's kind of the path.
Well, it's kind of interesting because you had an opportunity as obviously you were transitioning out of corporate America into your own work. And I love the fact that you literally started it on a dining room table. So for anyone who's listening, who thinks that it takes a whole lot of whatever magical pixie dust to start a business, it's not true. Paula just told you she started it on her dining room table. So
it does.
So
I would say, Chris, you probably know this, but I would say that it takes the desire, the drive, and a key ingredient for any of your listeners and millennials in particular is a passion for what it is that you want to do. Because if you have the passion, that's what will drive it versus just, oh, I think I'm going to make a lot of money, so I'm going to do this.
Absolutely. I always tell people business is more than a feeling. So it is.
That's right.
So that is pretty interesting.
That's right.
Because your background has been, you've seen kind of the gambit of change, especially when you start talking about data, right? You're talking about what data looks like 30 years ago versus what data looks like today. It's
right.
Two totally different worlds. So I'm interested. Tell me a little bit about how, as you went from corporate to running your own business and adding people, where did you start to notice that the shift in the dynamics of the employee kind of happened? How did you start to see that inside of your industry and even inside of the business that you were building?
Well, and that's a good question, because being a baby boomer myself, just coming up through the ranks as a baby boomer, you just kind of did your work. Put your head down, didn't ask a lot of questions, and kind of did as you were told. Of course, I never really liked that. So starting a business and having employees is a whole different world, as I'm sure you know. And I'll be honest with you, I was a little reticent in towards hiring millennials early on because they're so opposite or seem to be opposite of what a baby boomer is. But when I finally embraced it, what I was noticing is that the energy and the drive and the ability to embrace technology so much better than me, or I've been able to do in the past and probably can do today. They actually helped me with that. And then the transparency, I think, in the workplace is key. I don't really think there was a whole lot of transparency when I was in Fortune 1000 land. I mean, there's a lot of fiefdom silos and departments, people not collaborating. Baby boomers like to collaborate. They like to be involved in what's going on. And it can be perceived, in my opinion, by a baby boomer that they might be asking too many questions, but they like to understand the process of how things work. So that's one thing I would say. And I would say that their freshness, look a whole different types of eyes, looking at things that are so much younger than mine, it's invaluable. I have really, really embraced the millennials in the last few years.
Absolutely. So take me back to that moment that you just mentioned. You said, you know, you didn't ask a lot of questions back then. You kind of came into work, put your head down. You worked as many hours as they told you to work, and you hoped to one day rise through the ranks. So what was that like to go into the office every day, trying to be the quote unquote first one in, last one out mentality, just as an employee back then? And what was that dynamic like, knowing that you had this internal thing that said, you know what, I'm a little bit more than the rules and regulations of this time? What was that like to be in that moment?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think we were expected to work late and weekends to do, I mean, they couldn't make you do it, but we was kind of implied and you did your proposals and your sales time was sales time. And when you weren't selling, then you could write your proposals and things at night and you just kind of was understood and you did it. But that's not what happens today, right? I don't think people look at it that way. I think my major issue was not having a voice, okay? being a female salesperson when there was probably only 20% in the company at D&D at the time, didn't have a whole lot of voice. It was kind of not, it just didn't exist because it was kind of an anomaly being a female in sales. And it really bothered me because I kind of, you know, I'm an Italian background, Chris, and I'd like to say my piece. Okay. And being expected to kind of stay in the corner and be quiet wasn't working out too good for me. So I think that's another reason why I wanted to go on my own and do my own thing, because then I could, you know, work the way I wanted to work, say what I wanted to say. And then also, it was very important to me that the people that work for me be allowed to have that same ability. They can have their voice heard, even if we don't agree. You know, I mean, obviously, it's my company, so I have the last say. But I'd still like to hear other people's opinions and value their the exchange, you know, before a decision is made. And so that was very important to me. And you don't necessarily get that. I mean, it may have changed in corporate America. I've been gone a long time, but it certainly wasn't there when I was there.
So you're kind of speaking to some of those impacts, right? Because obviously there was an impact on you back then on how right. the environment of the workplace was, especially being a woman in a fairly large and widely known company. You weren't in a small company. Mm-hmm. So with those types of impacts, it pushed you to be an entrepreneur. What would you say that now being on the other side, being a leader as long as you have, what impacts would you say that millennials are having on the workplace and even maybe in your work environment today?
I think I've developed being transparent more than I was before, okay, with the team. I think the fact that they have the speed of embracing the processes and technologies and bringing them to the forefront with me. I've tasked people to go figure out how to do something the best way and find the technology and stuff to do it and then present it to me. And they're good at that. I think the younger, fresh eyes and you know, they haven't been jaded. Okay. They haven't, you know, if you've been out of college 1 or 2 years, you're just not jaded yet, you know, in terms of, you know, done that, been there, and this is the way it's always been type of thing. But I think sometimes the baby boomers are charged with, and probably rightfully so for some. Though, and I will say, they want a work-life balance, though, something that I don't think the baby boomers, you know, baby boomers are also wanting to create a lot of wealth. And I don't think that the millennials are as interested in creating huge wealth as they are. Surely they want to make money. Everybody does. But they also want to give something to society. They also want to, and I think that pendulum swinging back the other way from just how much money do I make, how big is my house, how many cars do I have, is a good thing. And I think the fact that they also tend to be very philanthropic, I think somewhere along the way we lost some of that too, helps. And I know that's not directly interfacing with the workplace, but I think it's, you know, who they are as individuals. And I think it kind of helps you or one or me, you know, to strive to be better as well. Does that help?
Yeah, you know, actually, what you're talking about is things that have maybe what people didn't recognize is how important, as you mentioned, the pendulum kind of swung. And millennials really approach the work because they've been shaped by certain events, certain things that have happened that they've seen kind of growing up, things that they care more about. Like you mentioned, it's not, you know, just about, you know, the, you know, $20 million home. It's about, you know, how am right. I making an impact socially? So, you know, what are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on what do you think has probably been some maybe major events, you know, whether it's been socioeconomic events or just lifetime events that have happened over the last 20 years that have kind of shaped the millennial and how they even approach work?
Well, I think they always say each generation, or at least they, whoever the they is, but they think each generation gets better, makes more money, is more, you know, is rising up in society a little bit better than the one before. I think most of the millennials, or a lot of the millennials, come from, you know, homes where there's good economic power and had things a little bit easier, I think, than the boomers did. And I think they, when they bring that to work, I think they do expect things to be sometimes a little bit easier. And then we as boomers think maybe, look, you don't realize how hard it was. Okay. And so that there's a little bit of a disconnect sometimes there. I think I trailed off on you there a little bit, Chris, into a different direction.
I think what you're talking about when I hear you is that, you know, it was a little easier. I've heard that from many baby boomer, you know, leaders who say, you know, I spoke to one who mentioned that, you know, they're the result of how we coddled as baby boomers because we didn't want our kids to have to work so hard. So do you think that maybe even some of that might have been, you know, right now we're seeing kind of the consequences of some of that?
Yeah, and I tell you that the millennials that work for me, I've actually speak to them about it. Okay, that you know, look, nobody says it has to be the way we were. You know, put your head down, be quiet, go sit in the corner, do your work. Okay, I think it's evolved in a nice way, and it's a good way. But you know, going from an entry level position to VP in a year just isn't going to happen. it seems like the trajectory. They want the trajectory to be fast. To get to the promotions and not necessarily have spent the time in the trench to totally learn everything that they need to learn to be at that level. I am a big believer in allowing people to excel at their pace. I mean, everybody's got their own pace on how far they want to stretch, how much they want to learn, and who they want to be. So I think that's important to try to treat each person as an individual. And look at what their strengths and weaknesses are, play to the strengths. I think it's a waste of time to play to their weaknesses and try to make them something that they're not. Anybody, not even a millennial, just anybody. And then focus on that and then help them develop. I mean, everybody that's ever worked for me, I told them, my job as a leader is to help you rise to the highest level that you can. And if it surpasses what's available here, then it may be time for you to go. And that's okay. But, you know, but while you're here, you know, let's learn as much as you can and grow as much as you can. To the highest level that you can.
So let's talk about some of those struggles that typically happen, or maybe that you've seen in your time as a leader between boomers and millennials. Where do you think? Let's just start with the boomers. Where do you think, as a boomer, boomers tend to struggle when either building that relationship or even trying to understand the millennial? Where do you think that the struggle is and the gaps are for boomers?
You know, I think maybe speaking for myself on this one, I would say maybe I had a block myself. I was like, wait a minute, you know what? It's kind of like when your parents told you I had to walk 2 miles to school in the snow, you know, and now you have a car that I bought you at age 16.
Right.
You know, I think I actually had a little bit of a block. I thought, well, wow, you know, this is tough for me. Why do they think it's supposed to be so easy? You know? And there was a little bit of a block. Like I can remember telling my business advisor that I work with, he says, well, you know, you need to get prepared for the millennials, you know, and this is what they expect. And I said, I remember saying, I don't really care what they expect. I had to do it this way, you know, but then I kind of grew up a little bit, you know, I thought, you know, I need to think about this, you know, they get good talent and the markets change. You know, I don't know if you know this, Chris, but 52% of the, since we're predominantly in the B2B marketing world, but 52% of the people in the employees in the B2B space are millennials.
Absolutely.
Okay. And that's just going to increase.
That's
just
right.
Going to keep increasing. So, you know, the talent pool is shifting to there. So if you don't make the shift, you're going to be left behind. So I did the work to understand what it is that was important to them and speak with them. Saw an interesting presentation by one of the LinkedIn executives at one of the Vistage meetings, the executive group I belong to, and they said at LinkedIn that they sit them down and tell them it's the tours of duty. How long are you going to stay? You want to stay 2 years? We're going to help you build out that profile so that you have a better LinkedIn profile when you leave, but you got to give me the 2 years.
Wow.
Okay. It's interesting. Nobody said that to me when I was going through the ranks. You know,
right.
If you don't like the job, get out of here.
Right.
So I think it's a huge difference. But I, again, as I said earlier, I think it's awesome. I mean, I can remember working for a vice president who told me, I told her, look, you're managing by fear. This is in the 80s. She says, well, that's how I was treated. I said, but we don't, my generation, this is boomer here. And she was actually a boomer too. I said, but we're not responding by management by fear.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so another reason why I had to get out of corporate America. And then you look at the millennials, they're not going to respond to you scaring them.
That's right.
The leads, you know, they see the work the home life is coming to work is an extension of the home. Okay.
Wow.
It's kind of like when their parents, they come to the office, they want to talk about themselves and family and feel comfortable that they can come in and tell you the truth about something or something's going on with them or whatever, which I don't remember that ever happening for me. And they didn't care. Just go do your work. So, I actually think it's good. I think it makes for a healthier environment. I think it makes for healthier teams and collaboration and working together. And you know what? They're young and they're a lot of fun.
That's right. All right. Well, I hope you're enjoying the conversation, the wisdom and the insight so far. This is part one of a two-part episode. So the next part is coming. Feel free to stay tuned for the next episode. Thank you for listening to High Level Wisdom, and we'll see you in the next episode. Hey, are you enjoying this podcast and episode? Maybe you would like to have your product or service in this spot right here. If you're interested in advertising with us, feel free to send us an email at info@highlevelwisdom.com.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.